Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today, we are celebrating the 23rd annual Blackjack Ball. We're joined by longtime host of the ball, Max Rubin, and winner of this year's Gross Gene Cup, Tony S., which goes to the player that wins the overall skills competition. Max and Tony, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Great to be here.
Hi, Bob. Nice to be back.
On these shows, we usually also invite the newest inductee to the Blackjack Hall of Fame, who was voted in at the ball this year. That went to Rob Wrightson. Due to scheduling problems, Rob couldn't make it at this particular time, and Richard and I are looking forward to interviewing him in the near future. Okay, Max Rubin, you've been hosting these Blackjack Balls since the mid-1990s.
Indeed.
You're not getting any younger, nor am I. What steps have been made in the past year to make sure the Blackjack Hall of Fame keeps going on into the indefinite future?
Well, not only the Blackjack Hall of Fame, but the Blackjack Ball as well. And we wanted to put together a foundation and so that it would live on in perpetuity. When I'm gone, when everyone else is gone, we would still have possibly a museum, some other things. And so reached out and said, let's do a couple things. And the nice thing, unasked, is that Dr. Edward Thorpe sent his gambling library to us and allowed us to start a silent auction on selling his gaming library, the most of his gaming library. So we silent auctioned five of his books this year, and they were some pretty remarkable books going back to 1963 by Major Riddle, who owned the Dunes. There's
Lawrence Revere's book, but with comments from Thorpe's comments.
He wrote to Thorpe. Then Thorpe annotated in the columns about some of the things that Lawrence Revere happened to have said, such as that if you used his system and all you had to do is play the indices, you would have about a 3.5% edge, to which Dr. Thorpe wrote baloney in the margins. And then he said, and if you spread 1 to 2 units, you'll have about a 4.5% edge, to which he wrote ditto. And he also had some other annotations in there. Along with that book was a letter from Dr. Lance Humble.
Yes.
About he and
Revere.
And it talks about the two of them. And he said, if there's ever a Blackjack Hall of Fame, Lawrence Revere deserves to be one of the members of that. And we included that with that book. And it was an original copy, first edition. And it was autographed to his idol, basically, from Revere to Dr. Thorpe. And it was interesting because I mentioned to Dr. Thorpe about some of the erroneous things that Mr. Revere was saying. And he said, well, Mr. Revere came up with some interesting concepts regarding bankroll and some other things that really impacted players. But he said, as far as his playing, he said he was very colorful.
And his charts were colorful.
And a really good salesman. And that was a nice way of saying that he took in a lot of people and taught them how to play using this magic system that didn't have an edge and made a lot of money off of it.
Well, no, I think because I know a number of people actually who took lessons from Revere. And, you know, one of the things he was notorious for was he would give you a deck and count it down and ask you to count it down, and you would get to the end and you would say, oh, I got +2, right? But it was supposed to be a full deck. And he'd say, well, you know, obviously you need more lessons, you know, and he would have removed some of the cards from the deck without telling you. So
that's an advantage play.
Yes, I'll say. It was an advantage
borderline cheating.
No. Well, did Thorpe disagree with his thing that on how many pit bosses did it take to screw in a light bulb? I'm pretty sure Revere said it was 3.
Did he? And what was the 3? 1 to hold the bulb and
I don't remember what it was. But anyway.
Two to look at their pinky rings in those days?
Revere did not have a high opinion of pit bosses.
No, he didn't. But Dr. Thorpe also gave us a book from Mike Goodman, who was a wise guy and a half-sharp guy who was a really good speaker, who was also at the Dunes in those days. And he had a book, and he said that these guys can take their highfalutin systems and bring them on down to the Dunes, and he'll take on anybody, including this Dr. Edward Thorpe and a guy named Scarney, and he'll take them both on and let them have at it. But funny thing is, he never did have him show up and play against him. But so Mike Goodman's book there, Major Riddle's book was there, and we had the Revere book. We also had Burning the Tables in Las Vegas by Ian Anderson.
Turning the Tables in Las Vegas.
First book
first
from
edition.
Ian Anderson that was signed to Dr. Thorpe. And the nice thing that Dr. Thorpe also did was emboss each book from his library. So as you purchased the book, you bought a book that was autographed to Dr. Thorpe from these famous people that was also embossed, showing you that it was part of the actual library of Dr. Thorpe. And then our final and last book was Professional Blackjack, original edition from Stanford Wong, including a lot of correspondence, original letters, but back and forth between Dr. Thorpe and Stanford Wong, which was really interesting. And overall, we did quite well with the books, and enough to establish the foundation and do everything we need to do. I don't know if we want to talk about numbers.
We don't want to talk about numbers, but also we don't want to hold the microphone out here when we're talking, right? Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so,
okay.
One of the things, to go back to your original question, the intent is to set up a 501c3 if we can, and a corporation or an LLC, and get a board together that will make decisions about the future, you know, so that the people on the board can decide things long after we're gone.
And there are a lot of issues, like how do we move forward with the Blackjack Hall of Fame, for example? How do we put together that board? How do we possibly change some of the criteria? How do we get more people engaged in the balloting processes, those sort of things? So a lot of those things will happen, and we'll have the right people on the boards, and then that entity will live on in perpetuity, and that's what we're looking for.
Very good. Blackjack Hall of Fame. They had six worthy contestants. This year, Rob Wrightson won. Richard, what can you tell us about Rob?
You know, Rob is an amazing guy. Someone that I tried to get on this show for years. And we still don't have him. You know, he says he's going to come. But, you know, we could probably do eight different shows about Rob Wrightson, because he's been involved in so many really, really interesting things. Coincidentally, when I first moved to Las Vegas, I was living off Twain in those cheap apartments that everybody moved to when they first moved to Las Vegas back then. And Rob and Wally Simmons were living right behind me in the apartments behind me. And so Rob started out as a card counter like everybody, and progressed on to many things. Just one thing that, if people want to do some Googling, you can Google Rob Wrightson, Esquire magazine, The Hammer. And there's this amazing article written in the 90s where he was ace sequencing, and this reporter got to follow him around. He had Emilio Estevez with him, who he was trying to use as a BP to take off the money. And he won $500,000 that weekend at Caesar's Palace, ace sequencing. So that was just, you know, this one story. But the other thing that he's really known for.
That would be an okay weekend.
Yeah. I mean.
Well, what's interesting is his doing that 3-day period when he was here, that's more money than most professional blackjack players make in their life.
Yeah.
A lot more. Right.
Yeah.
Not the people with the ball, but most professional blackjack players.
Yeah. Kind of depends on how you define professional, but
right.
Yes. But the other thing that he's really known for too is he founded CORE, which was the first big corporation to take over banking in California. And so when California first got gambling, it was class two, which meant that the casinos were not allowed to bank the games. So they could only make a profit off taking a commission on each hand. So they set up a corporation and they hired all of these temp workers. And basically they had people sitting at every table with a bankroll banking the games. And they made millions and millions and millions of dollars. So that's just a little bit about Rob Reitzen.
All right. Let's talk about the game of 21 questions. Every year, Max and friends come up with 21 impossible questions. This year, they were somewhat more impossible than others. They won't let Richard play or James Grosjean play because they won competition three times. They won't let me play because they let me submit a third of the questions. So other than that, everybody's eligible to play. It took 12 correct answers to have a shot at the finals. And what makes it a little bit sticky was one of the questions was they forgot one little word in there. Richard, what happened?
So, yeah, this is quite embarrassing. But one of the questions, the question which if you look at Bob's article on Gambling with an Edge, he's going to go in the comments and correct it. But there was a blackjack question about which hand had the best EV. And one of the hands was a 20 versus a dealer ace. And in the question, it says before the dealer checks for blackjack, and it should say after the dealer has checked for blackjack. So that was a mistake in the questions, pointed out to me the next day by John Chang. And so, yeah, that was one that was incorrect there.
Okay, so it took at least 12 answers out of 21 to make it, where there were four people with 12 and they had to be cut down to two. There were three higher scores. Highest score went to Andy Block. But think about it. This is 21 questions to the smartest gamblers in the world, and you get half of them right, and you make the finals. So they were tough questions. So, Tony.
Yes.
You did all right with that test. So people who score well on the test usually tend to like it.
Yeah.
So what was your favorite question?
Favorite question. There were some fun ones. I'd say my favorite one probably was the NBA one, just because it was really interesting. I was able to work out kind of a guess, but kind of an educated guess. I guess I'll read it here. It says, in a National Basketball Association game with 0.2 seconds left, the ball is out of bounds in possession of the team trailing by 2 points. The inbounding player throws the ball directly at the basket, and the ball would indeed have gone in, except one of the inbounder's teammates gently touches the ball when it is directly above the basket, 12 inches from going in. The teammate guides the ball into the basket. What happens? And it's a multiple choice. A is the inbounding team scores 3 points and wins the game. B, the inbounding team scores 2 points and sends the game into overtime. C, the inbounding team is guilty of offensive goaltending, which causes them to lose possession and the game. And D, 0.2 seconds is not enough time for any of this to happen, so time runs out before any points are scored or there's a change of possession. The inbounding team loses. So I happen to get this one right, not because I'm much of an expert in sports or NBA at all, but I do watch NBA and just kind of realized that, well, it was either going to be it's offensive goaltending, which seemed possible to me, but I didn't think you could score a basket from out of bounds, so it didn't seem like I thought maybe it wasn't goaltending, or maybe it was going to be B, that the offensive player is allowed to touch it and guide it in from the out-of-bounds pass. So I did choose B, and apparently that's the right answer, that the it counts as 2 points, even though
three, because right. A guy touched it right over the basket,
right.
So that
I knew
one
that.
Has to be out.
Yeah, so I guess it was between B and C, but it just didn't seem, whatever, it didn't seem like that would be goaltending, so it was just an interesting scenario. I don't know if it's ever happened in the NBA. Who came up with this one?
Yeah, and why don't teams do this is
right.
Another question.
Well, it has
it seems
happened.
To make all the sense in the world right. To do it, because take Steph Curry. You've got 0.2 left. He just shoots a beautiful typical three-pointer. He's on the even on the baseline. He could take two steps over from whatever range he needs, shoots a perfect shot. They have two guys under there. They go up. Now, what would happen if one of another player from another team went up and tapped it out as the ball was going in?
Legal play. There's no defensive, offensive defensive goaltending either, because it's not a legal shot.
See, that would make it so much fun. It'd be like a rugby game. They could be fighting so hard to get that ball in or out of the hoop. So
we're taking Mac back to his good old days. So yeah. did you have to guess? Now, you guessed on that one. Were you sure about most of the others?
I looked this over. There weren't any of the ones I just completely had to guess on, I actually didn't get right. I would say even the basketball one, I guess I would consider an educated guess. I wouldn't say I was certain. What else did I guess on? There's one from James Grosjean about teenage gambling, where there was, says this one comes from James Grosjean. Which of the following is not a legal way for a teenager to gamble in North America? A, legally betting real money on bingo at the age of 16. B, horse betting over the internet at the age of 18. C, playing blackjack at certain casinos in Oklahoma at 18. D, slug down a cocktail while playing any games they like at the age of only 18 at the casino in Quebec. E, all of these forms of teenage gambling are legal in North America right now. Or F, none of these specifically mentioned methods of teenage gambling legally exist in North America today. So there's, I guess I certainly wasn't sure which of these were legal. I was pretty sure you could play in Quebec at 18. And also drink at 18. So that seemed pretty likely. And I guessed that horse betting over the internet is legal at age 18. But so basically, they all seemed possible. Yes. So I chose that they're all legal. And that turned out to be correct. So that was a bit of an educated guess. But
I would just say that, though attributed to James Grosjean, anytime you see a question that contains the word slugging down alcohol, you know that Max has been editing that question.
I see. Okay, yeah, that's true. That's his phrasing for sure.
It's also, there's a lot of blackjack ball questions that include none of the above or all of the above. Those answers tend to be picked more often than not, although you won't know which ones are mine. But mine has none of the above or all of the above, and that's never the right answer. So, you have to figure out who asked the question.
Yeah, I tend toward those when I don't know, but they're not always right for sure.
One of the most fun questions for me is once we got to the tiebreaker, you had to name a Las Vegas or Clark County casino that no longer exists, and it went on forever. They must have named 30.
Yes. Oh, and it could have gone much
40,
longer.
It could have gone forever. It's astounding how many casinos guys have actually played in that they remember, and they started naming these places, just place after place after place. And then Bob Nersessian, who made the finals table, just used his Wiley Weasley attorney's ways and just bluffed us with a Church Street station, which existed in Florida, but I don't know that there was one here, but he said it with such authority, nobody squawked.
Bob's clearly been around Vegas a long time, because he named a bunch that I had never heard of and people verified, so I couldn't question him. I'd say he's new stuff must have been 70s and 80s. I don't know how long he's been around here, but he knew stuff.
Well, there were a lot that surprised me that didn't come up, like Foxy's Firehouse and the Jolly Trolley.
And the Sahara.
The Sahara. That was a pretty big deal.
I think
deal
it came up
state.
Toward the end. Someone finally said it. Maybe really? I missed it. You're right. Maybe you're right. That was missed.
The International didn't come up.
Desert Inn didn't come up.
The Hilton, the
Las
Desert
Vegas
Inn.
Hilton
yeah.
didn't come up.
The Barbary Coast wasn't mentioned.
LBH didn't come up. So there's a lot of
bills.
Yeah. All right. That's actually two in one from there.
And virtually every place we're talking about, somebody at this table probably played it professionally.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if you could play professionally in Foxy's Firehouse. But
absolutely you could.
Really?
They had a single deck.
Is that a stripper place? What is Foxy's Firehouse?
No, but the Jolly Trolley was a stripper place.
Yeah, sure sounds like it. No, I hadn't heard of those. But yeah, so I only got 12 right. So I just barely squeaked in to the playoff. So there was already, I think, three people in, and then four people tied.
Yes.
For the with the 12 questions, or five. There's five, I think, who tied with 12, and only two spots. I don't know, maybe it was four.
I think it was five, yeah. I think there were five guys.
And it was pretty stressful. At first, I was comfortable because I was around. I mean, I played Vegas in 95. I thought I had a few queued up, but then as it went on and on, I was getting nervous for sure. And I realized I was against tough competition with Bob and the other guy, John.
Yeah, Bob also mentioned the lost frontier, and then when was called on it, and then somebody changed it to last, and somehow that slid through as well. So
yeah, and he just made it seem so natural. Well, like, that's what I said. Right, and it was like, of course, the ladies and gentlemen of the jury, everybody listening to me, and everybody's just sitting there looking at him. But God, he says it with such authority. It's wonderful to listen to him speak.
I figured Max just owed Nersessian money, and so in lieu of that, he let him get into the finals. That's what I thought happened.
Okay. So now we get five people to the skills test. And the first question is, once Richard finds a discard tray, which was not obvious where anybody knew where a discard tray was. But so they found a discard tray.
I had it right there under the table.
Well, it was,
with the cards in it.
There were trouble finding it for a while, or maybe seemed like it.
The champagne really creates issues later in the night.
Yeah, even for the scribes, I think that might be what Max is implying.
By the way, we should say that, you know, in the early years of the ball, this skills competition went on for hours. I mean, there were a dozen different things or more, and there was all kinds of crazy stuff
golfing in Max's backyard.
Golfing either in my backyard. I had a very big house back then, so we had the party at my home. But they throw us out down here about 11, and then we take the party up to my house. So we have to finish, so we only have about five. But we had arm wrestling, and it was funny because we've had some women beat some of the guys and some guys. But we had everything from Wii boxing to a lot of golf things and sports
throwing cards into spittoons, all kinds of weird stuff.
There were some fun things to watch.
But so now it goes very fast.
Yeah. We have to get it over with to get everybody out of there. So
the first question was, estimate the number of cards in the stack. So are you good at that, Tony?
I would think so. It's definitely a skill of card counting just for true counts, but I haven't been playing that much. And I don't know. I mean, when I'm not really practiced and it's a different set of cards, I haven't been that accurate with the last two times I've been up there, but I was close enough, fortunately.
I don't remember. How far off were you?
I was off. It was interesting. I was off by 10 along with two other people. There was a three-way tie being off by 10 cards.
How?
And then the one who got first was Bob Nersessian.
Yeah,
which was surprising. And then somebody got way off. So
I might take a look, knowing it's Nersessian, wondering where that discard tray was for maybe 10 minutes in the restroom or something, just in case he made the finals table. It may have walked downstairs for a little while. Sorry, Bob, but
Max,
you are an attorney.
Every lawyer, it's like that's just the way it goes.
Yeah, that's their job. So anyway, right. He hit it on the number?
No.
But he was much closer than
he was.
I think he was off by three or four.
And who went down first?
Was a big player?
Yeah, there's two players who asked not to be identified other than by pseudonyms.
Sure.
So one is Big Player and one is Henry, and they went out in first and second.
Okay.
So we're not really identifying much any further.
Okay.
Because they're still players. Okay, there was another question, which I thought was the most interesting question. James Grosjean cut out of a standard deck of cards a 1-inch square of the center of the picture cards. So the kings, queens, and jacks, all four suits. So there's 12 of them. And you had to get what rank they were. And if you got the rank, then the suit mattered. The suit didn't matter by itself because frequently they're just a heart stream across the vest. And the surprising thing about it is the median score was negative because you got points off if you were wrong. So if you just sit there and go, this is way too complicated, I don't want to even mess with it, well, then you would have moved on.
Well, yeah, I was completely befuddled by that. I've looked at cards most of my life, both in poker and blackjack, but I've never paid attention to what the face card details look like right in the middle there.
Are guys in the room that would score 100 on
right,
that
well,
test.
Right, well, probably hold carders. And that's the one thing I've never really done
certainly not the part of the card you're looking at for hold carding.
That's also...
Well, sometimes it is.
Yes, it is. That's okay. All you can see.
Really? Yeah, sometimes
you
just
must
see...
know what it is.
I see. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Why would you see the middle? I guess I can imagine.
Yeah, well,
I
why?
Because,
why
that's because it's called the squeeze move when the dealer takes the cards out and you can't see the corners, you can't see the tops, and they squeeze the card as they move it over, and all you can see is the bow in the belly of the card, and you have to be able to identify the difference between a jack and a queen in a three-card poker.
That's
means
important.
A lot.
Yeah.
So you need to know what that is. If you are playing, let's say, Mississippi stud, might make a difference if something happened to be a queen of spades versus a king of hearts, depending on if you happen to have a king in your hand or whatever it may happen to have been. So it's a great skill to know, and you will go blind trying to learn it.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Well, I'll just say that that was absolutely lucky on my part to get past that we were down to three people at that point, and I was completely befuddled. I looked a little bit. I came up with a strategy which probably wasn't that great, which was, well, probably the jacks are the least ornate, right? You'd think kings and queens are ornate, but I ended up labeling probably five cards jack, actually. At the end, I was like, oh no, I labeled five of them jack. Only four of them could be, but I ended up with a total of +1 point because it was negative when you got one wrong. And
plenty high enough to win.
Well, but I didn't know that because Bob and I went first. And Bob had two, and I had one, and now the third person I had to wait while the third person went, and I was like, well, he has to get less than one. Is this even possible? I thought I was out in third. So
did you give
lucky.
Them their scores as they were going?
No, but two of us went at once, not seeing each other. Because
there were
only
two
boards
to work with.
Oh,
so one
okay.
person had their back turned while they did it.
Yeah.
And then James was scored them, and then erased everything, and then gave one of the boards to the third
that
player.
Must have been hard too, because you're trying to win this thing. Everybody's watching, and you're trying to determine the sash that either a lady is wearing, who's a queen, or a jack, like you said, the knave, who's there must not be much for him. He just wears a little shoe shine belt or something, and wears the kings is going to be very ornate or whatever it may be. But it's interesting. It was a great question.
It was it was pretty brilliant and a big surprise because it was a change up from the previous years that was not expected. And I later looked, the only one that really is kind of obvious is the king of clubs. And if I had just written that one down, I would have had 2 points and done better. But I don't even sure. I don't know if I got that one right and other ones wrong. I didn't remember. I was kind of out in the woods there.
You got a point for the suit only if you got the rank correct.
Right.
And there was no negative if you guessed the suit incorrectly. So, if you actually just put clubs on all 12.
Yeah, but then it was zero because you didn't get a point unless you also had the rank, though.
But if you just put the same suit on all 12, then you don't get penalized on the ones you're wrong,
right?
But you get the extra point on the ones you're right.
Yeah, guessing a suit was a free roll. I should have done that, but I actually don't think I realized it till after. So, but luckily I survived.
Okay, another question. We're down to three players now: Tony and Bob Nersessian. And Andy Block. Andy Block was a member of MIT teams, also done.
Did you guys play together?
Oh, yeah. No, Andy and I, one of the first players I played with. He was like mentor. We go way back.
Yeah.
And he's also a world champion in rock, paper, scissors, for any of you who didn't know that. Richard takes a single deck, and he holds up the six of clubs, puts it to the side, shuffles the deck, which, although shuffling the deck wasn't really necessary, then he puts the six of clubs at the very bottom of the deck. Then he gave each of the players in turn a cut card and said, number one, tell me how many spaces you're going to deal.
Well, they got to cut first.
Well, yeah, they got to cut, but they have to say, are you going to play one hand or two hands or six hands or whatever it is? And you want to get that six of clubs as the dealer's down card.
Well, it could. Well, you couldn't get it to the up card because the other requirement was you had to cut at least 10 cards.
Well, you could get it to the up card.
No, you have to cut at least 10 cards, and the most number of hands you could play was 6, so you can't get it to the dealer's up card.
Mm. Okay.
So.
Well, yeah,
Is that a wild ass guess? Or
well, that was
good?
No. That's how I failed in the previous year. We hadn't really talked about it. I came in second last year at the ball, and that's the skill that I failed at against Wahoo last year. And it was disappointing because it was a skill at least at some points I'd been fairly good at. But I mean, it was a little bit of, I mean, maybe choking or a little bit. But I cut 9 cards last year, which was an automatic fail when we were just the two of us left. It was heads up. And so I wanted to redeem myself this year. I actually had told myself I should practice this before the ball, but I just got busy and never did it.
You know, it reminds me of Survivor, and you watch, for people who watch Survivor, I always go, how do these morons not practice making fire before going on Survivor? You know what I mean? Because this is like an essential skill in that TV show. But yeah, I mean.
How about not knowing how to swim?
Well,
you think you're going on the show, you would go down to the YMCA and say, can I spend 30 minutes and you can teach me how to get to the other side of the pool?
Right. But anyway, I don't want to get sidetracked on Survivor. But yeah, I mean, you know, if I were still competing, yeah, absolutely, I would brush up my cutting skills and my counting down a deck and my,
and
you know.
And card memorization skills, which didn't come into play
this year.
But I wouldn't be surprised if it reared its head next year.
Right.
Before we get to the final question, we're going to have a few brief commercials. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In March, the promotion will be for players who already receive mailers. Instead of getting your usual amount of money 4 times, Tuesdays through Thursdays, you pick up free play Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. And if you do, you get an identical amount on Friday or Saturday of the same week. Pick up all 8 offerings of free play, and you get an additional twice as much one on Monday, April 1st. No fooling. We are down to our very last free video poker class. It is what video poker players should know about slot clubs. It is going to be on March 12th at noon. It's the difference between various casinos returning more in cashback or better foods or have better mailers or offer bowling alleys or whatever it is. They differ a lot. No casino is one size fits all. And so this gives players a way to recognize the different possibilities. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is 100 play draw poker with Super Times Pay. Super Times Pay is a game, a 6 coins per line game, where it's played like normal video poker, except on average, once every 15 hands, you get a multiplier. And the multipliers range between 2x and 10x. The game adds about 0.25% to the overall return to the game. You do not need to learn new strategy. There's a slightly higher multiplier, a slightly higher variance, but the game is a lot of fun and it has been very popular. All right, we are back talking with Max Rubin and Tony S. We are in the final table at the blackjack ball. We are down to Tony and Bob Nersessian, who we've already ragged on considerably tonight.
Let me just rag on him a little bit more.
Oh, well, go ahead.
So the final test is counting down a double deck.
Yes.
And he just complained and complained and complained about that he wasn't a card counter. I'm like, Bob, it's the blackjack ball.
And you're in the Hall of Fame, Bob.
Yeah, I know you don't know how to count cards, but you can't complain that there's card counting involved in the competition at the blackjack ball. I mean, what do you want? To be a cookie baking competition?
Right. Well, he was fortunate it was actually the last event this year because it
he would have been out
earlier,
much earlier.
But most years, it's the first thing that knocks somebody out and say, okay, now we got rid of the shaft. Let's go on with the people that can really play. But yeah, he got close.
Yeah, the year I was a shaft, I had not practiced counting cards for 20 years, and I was a guest regular player. So I so at the time it's also a speed contest. If you were correct, then you moved on. If you were incorrect, you didn't. So I, as soon as I did it, I slammed the deck down and said, my count is zero. And so it was not a terrible strategy. It turned out that Richard came up with the wrong count. And Max informed him, and Richard shook his head because I was really sure. And then Richard scanned the deck, and somebody had put two jack of hearts in the middle of the deck. So they decided that, yeah, okay, Richard, it counts. And Richard ended up winning that year. But that was – things happen. But
yes, they do. So when you're hauling cards from the house back down to the party place and back and forth, it's just astounding. And sometimes people will reach in and play with the cards.
Yeah,
and you just or sort of grab nervous them on habit. The side, and then you're playing the game, and you go, what just happened? Where are the cards?
Oh, yeah, like you have the deck set up in a particular arrangement for something, and then, somebody was just playing with the cards.
Yeah, seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah.
So zero wasn't the right guess for the count? Or
yeah, that year it was close. So the count was plus five. But,
okay.
But anyway, I blew out quickly, which was probably the appropriate result. But so Bob had no idea even what counting was. There were three cards picked out, and the numbers are either, plus one, zero, or minus one. Bob comes up with the count of minus six, which is...
Well, you could have plus or minus three, or plus or minus two, or whatever.
I know, but you can't have plus six on three cards.
No. Yes, right. Yeah.
Well, unless he wants to do some advanced count, but I don't know why he would.
if he could... Yeah, there are better counts to use than high-low.
Well, there are, but we typically say, more big cards than little cards?
Well, actually, what I say now is you can use whatever count you want. Just at the end, you have to tell me what your count is and what it means. So if your count is plus six and you're counting fives as plus two and whatever, that's fine. You just have to tell me ahead of time and then... So we can figure out if your answer is correct or not.
Well, we actually saw that in action last year with one of the smarter people I know on the planet, your brother, who counted the deck right and announced it wrong and fought that he was right because it was a minus two. And he said, it's a minus two, so there's two more little cards here. Right? Or there's two more big cards. Yeah, whichever one. It was just the opposite. And he was right, except he was stating it wrong. And he finally, when it was done, he said, I had the right answer. I said it wrong. He was kicking himself in the butt all night long.
And it was a shame because if he had stated it right, it took him two or three minutes to count down the deck because he hadn't played in 20 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's not very dexterous. But he did have it right, and others at the table had incorrect counts. So he actually would have gone forward, even though he was way slower than everybody else.
Yeah.
So, were you confident in your number? Have you done this enough?
It's
you counted it twice in the amount.
This
of time
was interesting
Bob
because
was...
I realized that this should be a slam dunk against someone who can't count. But of course, that made me more nervous. It's like, how can I screw this up? And then I got through it pretty quickly. I saw that Bob wasn't even... I didn't know what he was doing, actually. But he was going through the cards, and I realized
either.
He wasn't even halfway through. I was like, well, I guess I have time to double-check this. And I probably could have counted three times, to be sure, in the time he took. And I was right the first time anyway. But I came out with zero, which actually seemed like an unlikely number to me. I thought plus one... Plus one or minus one seems they're actually a little bit more likely for the high low,
right.
Slightly. I checked it later. I'm such a nerd, but it's if you have to guess, you should actually guess plus one or minus one for future people. Maybe you should take out four cards so the guessing isn't as powerful.
Maybe you're right.
A 23% chance of just slamming down and guessing seems. Maybe unfair to people who count.
On the one we did, it was actually five cards. They took out five cards.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I
luckily didn't choke on that one and came out ahead. So I was definitely lucky on the Gross Gene face card thing. And then once it got down to counting cards, I Yeah, I'm not that practiced, but I'm still pretty.
And what are you doing with your 80-pound trophy?
15-liter Nebuchadnezzar of Bel Air Rose Champagne.
Well, I'm honored and happy to get this beautiful trophy that I guess Don Johnson needs to be thanked for acquiring that for me. So
for sure.
What am I going to do with it? That's the question.
Yeah, and do you have my phone number?
I do not. I had a couple suggestions for, I think, still thinking about it. One of the suggestions was to pour it in a hot tub and take a bath, but that doesn't really, that sounds, I think that sounds more fun in theory than in practice, actually. Yeah. That doesn't
sounds
really,
kind of disgusting to me,
actually. Gross in pretty big ways. So the best suggestion was actually a former teammate from back in the day, someone I played with 15 to 18 years ago, said she's been trying to arrange a reunion of some of the people we played with back then, and we should all get together, and this would be a great centerpiece, and we certainly should be able to get enough people together to open that up. Although, yes. I need to find out, how do you open that thing? I mean, I guess the cork will come out, but then how do you pour it? It's got a huge
opening. Don said that in the clubs, they have two guys who come to pour it.
Right.
I mean,
some instruction. Or
well, Munchkin, didn't you guys open one this year at
so
the party?
So I was going to say, you know, you could start a new tradition.
Continue a new tradition.
Yes. So
and it's not a throwaway because it's an engraved bottle. The bottle itself costs well over $1,000. Well over a couple thousand, actually. So
There is, depending on when the ball is now, there has been this AP ski trip that happens. It's supposed to happen in between the Super Bowl and the ball. So people come here for the Super Bowl, go on this ski trip, then come back for the ball, and it's all in 1 week period. And so this year, Wahoo was on the ski trip, and he brought the champagne and they opened it up and drank the whole bottle up on the ski trip.
But you weren't there, Richard. You didn't see this
in
action?
You know what? I don't like champagne.
Oh, you don't like
skiing?
So
I didn't go for the – I was on the trip. I just didn't go for the drinking of the champagne because it was happening late at night. And
Do you know if they guzzled it all in one night?
I believe they did. But
did they? Yeah. It would be hard to keep in a refrigerator unless you had a
– Well, they could put it out in the snow.
Put it in the snow, I suppose.
Trip, so.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, and you could get a lot of people toasted on that. A liter apiece for 15 people, that'd be enough.
Yeah.
Get a party going.
Yeah, it'll be quite a party.
Yeah.
But actually, that sounds like a great idea is to have a team reunion. And
yeah, that would be a fun way to because you definitely have to get a party together. It's not something you could just be wasted on in even a small group. So, and as Max was saying, that even after it's drunk – even after it's poured out, the trophy, the bottle itself is a great trophy.
I'm really jealous of those bottles.
Yeah.
I so want to compete just to get one of those freaking bottles.
Right.
And yours, you have, I mean, the best one because it got signed by all the Hall of Fame members.
I was
going to
mention that was Max's suggestion.
Yeah,
and everyone who was at your after party, at Richard's after party, all the Hall of Famers who were present that day signed it in silver Sharpie, Max's suggestion. I think it was wonderful. It's great. I mean, Ed Thorpe, Max, and James, and Don, and Richard.
I also did that with
John Chang was there, so he probably
bought
John
copies, original copies of Ed Thorpe's Beat the Dealer, had him sign them, and then we had some Hall of Famers sign them, and Munchkin, for helping, got one of the books. And did you get yours yet?
No. No, I didn't know I got one.
Munchkin's going to get one of those books. But the curator at Barona, Mike Patterson, he got one. I'm keeping one. But I ordered all that are available now for next year. There's only two hardbacks originals out there right now. But we want to do this again as another auction item. Now, the beautiful thing about what Dr. Thorpe has done, he gave us 15 boxes of books. We have an extraordinary amount of books. We've got books that go into the 50s and some papers that were done as in the 30s. But it's anything you want to know about backgammon or horse racing and the horse racing wise guy beat books and how they were doing it. And we know a couple guys now that are in the horse racing business have done a little better than that guy that wrote the book. But it's still interesting to see that the guys that wrote the book back in 1953, we've got original copies of it now. And Dr. Thorpe kept it all and then gave it to us. That's a pretty nice thing. And he brought his whole family this year, by the way. There were eight of them there.
Yeah,
and by accident, I was at the dinner table with all eight of them. And I had actually sat at a table at random writing up notes And they all came and sat down, and there's only 8 seats. And so I go, well, then I'll move. You wanted this for your family, fine. And they go, oh, no, we can find another chair. Please join us. So didn't have to ask me twice. I sat next to Ed's wife, who's extremely charming, had a lovely conversation with her, and she told me they've been married 7 years, and he picked her out mathematically. So he used a mathematical formula to choose her as the right one.
All right. Let's hear the algorithm here. I got to hear this one.
Well, it happens to be in next week's column. So you can get it at gamblingwithanedge.com. I will send you a copy of that. We got some more questions to cover. So we don't really, but it's highly available. And I was charmed by their whole family. There were 3 kids and one spouse of a kid and 2 grandkids. And
the 2 grandkids, of course, are both at MIT.
No, one just graduated from Dartmouth.
Huh? Oh, one moved to Dartmouth. Oh, yeah, just safety school.
But anyway, I found that was he was already one of my heroes, and then got to spend the night with the family was.
I have to say it was pretty special to, you know, go answer my door and have him on my doorstep. That was
yeah. All right, he's a remarkable human being.
Yeah,
he really is. Everything he's done, and so philanthropic, and such a kind man. He's nothing like. And Rob Wrightson brought this up during his speech. Is what's so unique about this subculture we're all part of is the honesty that's involved, and it's just the opposite of what people would think. Like if you had a party of poker players. If you have a party of poker players, not a lot of people are saying, God, this room just reeks of honesty and kindness. And no, everybody in the room is trying to come up with a bad idea how to get in your pocket, right? Whereas at our party, it's, you know, a lot of people with a lot of trust in each other and, you know, that play together and trust each other as they're out on the road and doing things. But it's pretty unique in that it was nice to have Dr. Thorpe there to validate what Rob Wrightson was saying about the honesty and the character of the people in the room.
Now, we've always had to come up, people who invited have to come up with a bottle of premium champagne. Some people, in their last time they were invited, brought mum champagne. They, for some reason, didn't get an invitation the next year. But this year, you also had to pay $100, which is to help to subsidize the blackjack ball forever. Now, a lot of your audience is, although they're wealthy enough, they are frugal. And I might be in that category. Did anybody refuse to come because they had to come up with $100, as far as you know?
I don't know that anybody refused to come. I know someone who couldn't, who's kind of down on his luck, and I comped him. And I said,
I didn't hear that from anybody. Nobody. I had a couple of people say, this is a good idea. You should have been doing it a long time ago. But I didn't hear from anybody that they weren't coming because of the money.
Right. And we changed it. And if you'd noticed on the invitation, it used to be a chilled bottle of premium champagne. Now it's a chilled bottle of quality champagne. So we got a lot. We had some mums. We had Vouvray. We had those. But we weren't overloaded with, like at the end of the night, we didn't have extra Dom that we used during the rest of the year for other blackjack things. We didn't have extra crystals, that sort of thing. But we had Vouvrays and still the Tsarina, which is a big thing out there now. And, you know, they're still really nice champagnes. But if you're paying the $100, you don't feel quite as obligated to bring a bottle of Dom if you don't want. But a lot of people still brought Dom, and they drank it. And I said, pour it as fast as you can to the bartenders, too. I wanted them to make sure it was free-flowing down there at the party, too, and not just at my house. So we saved some for the house, but it was still very good stuff.
It is. And the one that Don Johnson brings, Bel Air. So I asked Don, which of your products is closest to Dom Perignon? So he said this one. So we poured it, the gold, and I sniffed them both, and I could not tell the difference.
which says more about me than the champagne, I suspect. But the Bel Air Gold is $35 a bottle. The Dom Perignon is $160. So I suspect I'm going to bring Bel Air Gold next year, as long as that's allowed.
And I would bet you in that room, and room of most people that aren't wine snots, that they couldn't tell you the difference between Dom and that or some of them.
You know, they've done number of studies on this, and people can't tell the difference between expensive wine and cheap wine.
So there's
expensive wine and cheap wine is different.
There's once you get to the 30, 40 and up, you can tell that $8 stuff. But once you get to a level, but Cristal, I could tell Cristal's got a unique flavor to it, a unique effervescence to it, and so much of it's brandy. And Don Johnson is the master at that, with Ace of Spades and other things. So he's gone through a lot of bottles of champagne, and they sponsor this. And you know, it's Jay-Z and Beyonce that own the company that sponsors this for the Blackjack Ball.
So weren't they there?
Yeah, right.
They're probably doing something where they're picking up another couple hundred million that week or whatever. But he said that Jay-Z may be the smartest man he's ever met.
Really?
Yep. Brilliant guy.
And he knows some pretty smart guys who went to the Blackjack Ball.
Yeah, he does. He sure does. So,
and he's no slouch himself. All right. So any final words to our audience about this year's Blackjack Ball? It was fun. Let's do it again next year. Tony, you going to win again?
Well, I'll give it my best shot. It was actually my fourth final table, so it was. I was glad to redeem myself. I definitely was inspired by that bottle, which has only been, this is the fourth time I think they had that as a trophy. And thanks to Max for starting this. I think my first ball was 1999. I didn't make all of them. There was a period where I wasn't in Vegas much, but
You missed a few, and I thought maybe you disappeared.
I just wasn't. Yeah,
hadn't seen you around, and then all of a sudden you started coming back again. But you were coming to some of the first ones at my home.
Right,
back when we used to have it at the house.
Those were great fun.
Yeah,
And it's always been. Yeah, it's been a great time all those years, and it was fabulous. It was great to win it. I was really happy. So,
thing is, there's this safe harbor for people to get together in anonymity still. I mean, people know who they are among each other, but nobody's sharing that with the rest of the world. So people can do that. You just can't do it. You couldn't say, we're all going to meet at Caesars, but don't tell where we're going to be at Caesars. Well, you can bet they would have APBs and bolos out, and they would have a picture of everybody before the party was over, coming out of a suite or something. So it's a good thing, and it's, you know, pretty rare. And then Munchkin, of course, has the after party at his house the second day, and everybody gets to see each other for 2 days. It's a pretty good thing. And
yeah,
it's wonderful. So,
and Munchkin actually doesn't get enough credit. He did a lot of the work in the background here. He's been Max's right-hand man for a couple of years on this.
He has. It's a lot of this is transitioning over toward Richard. He handles all of the invitations now, handles that. That is not a fun job. And I'd like to say it's a labor of love, but it's not. There's a lot of wondering, should we invite this guy? No. Is this guy a one-up? And, you know, we could open it up and make it much, much, much bigger if we want to. We don't want to, but
We couldn't fit him in there.
We couldn't get him in there. And that's one of the problems, is everybody wants to come every year, and we can't invite everybody every year. And a lot of people, what about me? And, you know, they all think they qualify, just like the Hall of Fame. I keep getting the unsolicited things from people that say, I deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, and because I wrote a paper once on Spanish 21. And, okay.
Yeah, I don't think you have enough video poker players in the Hall of Fame myself.
No, we don't. But
just a thought. Thank you, Max. Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.
Thank you.